Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and I have invited author Jerry Pollack to the show, and he is here to talk about his new book, a spiritual fiction titled Messiah Interviews, Belonging to God. Jerry Pollack is the author of 75 scientific publications. His background includes both a Bachelor of Science and a Master of Science in Pharmacy from the University of Toronto, a PhD in biophysics from the Weizmann Institute of Science in Israel, and postdoctoral training in microbiology at the New York University School of Medicine. Dr. Pollack is currently Professor Emeritus in the Orobiology and Pathology Department in the School of Dental Medicine at the State University of New York at Stony Brook on Long Island. Jerry's first Writer of the Arts book, Divinely Inspired, Spiritual Awakening of a Soul, was a spiritual memoir originally published in 2003 and will be reissued as a second edition in January of 2009. His not-so-fictional novel, Messiah Interviews, Belonging to God, has just been released and is Jerry's way of giving back to the Creator. Jerry is 67 years old and is married to Marsha, his beshert, and I may be pronouncing that wrong, which is his destined one. They reside in Florida, and you can find out more about Jerry through his website, www.shekinahthirdtemple.org. So I am so happy to have Jerry on the phone today. Welcome to the program, Jerry.
Thank you, Anita. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, good. So up until your first book in this genre, Divinely Inspired, you were writing solely in the realm of science journals, and your background clearly suggested that you're a scientist at heart. So tell us about this leap to writing spiritual books that you're now publishing.
Well, I don't know why it happened, but I was blessed. The first time I was blessed was in 1982 when I heard a voice in my summer cottage, and the voice was external, definitely external, and the voice said, "And you shall be mine." And then growing up in a dysfunctional family, and then after 1982, around 1991, I had my first episode of bipolar disorder. And in 1995, I had a major breakdown and was forced to leave the university, Stony Brook, where I was a scientist, a teacher, an academic. And for whatever reason, late 1998, I had a series of spiritual experiences. And that prompted me to begin doing a lot of reading outside the scientific area, but into the spiritual world. And so I began a journey, and in 2003, I originally published a memoir, Divinely Inspired, Spiritual Awakening of a Soul, and it was a natural leap to then study some more and keep climbing inch by inch the spiritual ladder, and then write another spiritual book, but this time a fiction, The Messiah Interviews. And I guess it's about giving back to my Creator in some way.
I imagine that Messiah Interviews could not have been written without your first book, Divinely Inspired.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. It was like a natural flow. Divinely Inspired was really more about my background, growing up in a dysfunctional family, talking about the therapy that I embraced and had continued for even till now, to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And then the unusual spiritual experiences, and then bringing my scientific background to thoughts about creation and evolution and the purpose of the Ten Commandments. And
it's an interesting mix when you have such a background in science to apply it to theology and a more spiritual tone.
Yeah, it's a wonderful background.
Yes.
It's a wonderful background for writing, but being in the biologist area, I think you'll find that many biologists are not believers. They in order to believe and in order to have faith, you have to kind of, if you haven't had spiritual experiences like I have, where my faith was a result of those spiritual experiences, then if you haven't had those encounters, you have to abandon your intellect in order to kind of believe. So many biologists and many scientists who are very rational, logical-minded people, and besides scientists, you have a host of other people.
Sure.
You can't really kind of touch the spiritual field because it's something you can't grasp onto.
So you think you need some sort of jarring event?
You either need a jarring event, or in my wife Marcia's case, it was something that was kind of something that she had when she was a little girl. Mm-hmm. So a jarring event happens, or if you can have friends or some associations or belong to a church or a temple, something that can kind of bring you into the spiritual world, because you can't really. The human brain has problems because unless you have a familiarity with something, then it's very difficult to make a jump to understand or appreciate that something, mm-hmm. like having a baby or having a migraine headache.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if you now jump to God, where he's no longer in our world, he's here, but he's hidden, and he pops up in many ways that we're really not aware of, and if you were back in biblical times where things were happening, where there was a more public God, then you wouldn't have to make this leap of faith. But in today's world, you pretty well have to make a leap of faith. And if you're really hardcore, you may never be able to make that leap of faith because your logical mind is preventing you from doing that. In the case of an agnostic, he's prevented from actually believing. In the case of an atheist, he's using his free will to choose to disbelieve in God.
Mm-hmm. So it's almost like you have to believe to see.
Well, I think you can't take the next step. I mean, I think you're very limited. If you're an agnostic, you're open. But I think really an agnostic is really an atheist who has subliminal fear.
Mm-hmm.
So when a crisis occurs, he'll be calling, or he or she will be calling on God. That's my own feeling.
So did you have a spiritual upbringing, or was this kind of a radical event that happened to you?
I did not have one. I was bar mitzvahed. I did, sing what I was supposed to do. I went to Hebrew school, and I learned how to read and write, but nothing more. And it was really the events that happened at the end of 1998, and now that I go back to hearing the voice in 1982, that really triggered all of this. It's kind of like I have like a invisible mandate to go ahead and write these books, even though I've never had anything more direct, no conversations, nothing like that. But I have heard the voice on three occasions, and I have had all of these spiritual encounters, and that's changed my life completely.
Now, have you met with any criticism about hearing a voice? I mean, there's a lot of people out there that would like to put all sorts of connotations on that, and especially, you know, if you've had issues that you've had to deal with in your life and come from dysfunctional families. So how do you deal with critics?
Well, in 1982, I didn't have bipolar disorder.
Mm-hmm.
If anything after 1991, you could easily criticize, because I did hear voices in my bipolar disorder, and you know, I even talked to those voices, and I had medication for those voices. But and then again in 1998-99, I heard the external voice that I heard back in 1982. The internal voice is very different from the external voice. I would recognize that voice everywhere. And my daughter heard a voice, too, and it turned out that was at a time when I was, you know, in the hospital, and she was able to get me out of the hospital, convince my wife that I should come out of the hospital. I had taken my second suicide attempt. I'm lucky, really, to be here.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I think I'm... The whole purpose of the Messiah interviews was to empower people. It wasn't really to preach.
Mm-hmm.
So people have their free will to choose to believe what I've written, and choose to believe what they are prepared to do to enter the Messianic age. And it's all about free will. So if people decide that they don't believe a word of it, that's their decision. I'm comfortable with that.
Mm.
I'm trying to offer this because this material was never offered in one place before, in a way that people could understand it and people could then go on and empower themselves to maybe improve their character. So I can deal, because of the therapy that I've gone through, I can deal with all kinds of rejection.
With the naysayers, okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to empower people. I'm not preaching to people.
Yes, that really comes across with this book. Well, why don't you tell our listeners then a little bit about Messiah Interviews. What's the premise of this book? It's so unique.
Well, can I go back a little bit, Divinely Inspired?
Yes, but, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Which is a lead in. Divinely Inspired was about my past and my present, and it took a short glimpse into the future, but the Messiah Interviews is really where the past, present, and future merge. They come to a halt, and then all of a sudden life begins again. The Messiah Interviews is now taking your leap of faith and believing that there is a life after death, or a life even before death, and it's about a reaffirmation of God. It's also about providing information about the Bible, trying to make the Bible come alive and connect the Bible to our modern world, and then connect the Bible and the modern world to this future world, this Messianic age. This Messianic age was written about in the Hebrew Bible and also in the New Testament.
And this is where we are right now?
Yeah. Okay. These things were said. A lot of people, we believe that we're very close to the Messianic age now.
Mm.
And they kind of felt that it would come at a time when the world had an opportunity to destroy itself,
mm-hmm.
which is, I believe, is now.
Yes, clearly.
Yeah, and but in the Hebrew Bible, it talks about two ways that you can bring about this age. And it's really like the age is a Garden of Eden, because it talks about the age was talked about by 13 prophets over hundreds of years, and also talked about elsewhere in other books, and then in the Hebrew Bible and also in the New Testament. In the Hebrew Bible, it talks about both from a way where we can all come together and come together in peace and harmony, and also the more destructive way, the apocalyptic way, which is talked about also in the New Testament. So it's kind of like a choice, and it seems to me right now we're heading on the destructive choice.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes about, there'll be healing, there'll be food, plentiful food. It'll be like a Garden of Eden again.
Mm-hmm.
And probably, from what I understand of it, we'll move to a new level in evolution, whereby humanity will subdue or possibly even eliminate the part of themselves that makes them choose the wrong choices in life.
And what part of a human is that? Is that the ego?
I think it's the emotional part.
Oh.
Because I really believe it's the emotional part, because I've gone through so much therapy in a therapy called primal therapy that I believe it's the emotional part, because there was an anthropologist who I believe is still the curator of the New York Museum of Natural History, and he wrote that because you have this connection between the lower brain and the emotional centers to the higher brain, human beings, for the most part, will never be rational human beings. And I kind of believe that that's a good thing, because I believe the emotional part of you is really what is the guide to the spiritual part of you. So I think something is going to happen in this evolutionary process whereby that emotional part, I believe, maybe it'll be a combination of both, will kind of change. And they talk about the good inclination and the evil inclination in Judaism. And there's always, if you didn't want to talk about in terms of Judaism, you would have to say there's always some kind of internal voice inside of you,
mm-hmm.
when you make a choice. And we're really talking about moral choices.
Yes, we are. Mm-hmm.
So it's something's going to happen where there's going to be an advancement of the brain somehow, whereby this bad inclination is going to be subdued or eliminated. And whether that's a good thing or not, I think free will still be present, but we'll be at such a high point, and
we won't be ruled by our emotions.
We'll be able to maybe use our brain power to overcome those emotions that drive us in the wrong direction. But it'll be an age of God. It won't be necessarily an age of the Messiah. Messiah will carry out basically his duty, and that's the belief that God will then come back on the public stage of life just as he was, when he was back in biblical times. Now, that's really a hard sell, because if you don't believe, everything that I'm telling you today is going to be construed as nonsense. So you can only take the next step if you believe, and then that opens up a whole world if you believe.
Now, I want to just ask you about the whole morality issue. Do you think that there's a difference between human morality and divine morality?
Yes.
What's the difference?
The difference, and I don't think I did a great job. I think I kind of tried to do it when I put it into the Messiah interviews. Human morality, there's two kinds of things that happen to you when you come up with a particular situation or moral test in life. One thing that happens is that you can express yourself from your heart. Or you cannot express from your heart, and the person who's listening to you will not know the difference. So in your head, and it's impossible to have immoral thoughts, I believe. They're constantly coming into your head, but it's whether you act upon those. So from a human point of view, who knows what you're really, really thinking in the crevices of your mind? If you say something, another human being really can't tell that. And so you could say to yourself and say whatever, and the question really is, from a human point of view, you can rationalize that, and you can say, I made a very good moral choice. But if you believe that the Creator is omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, he's all-knowing, omniscient, then in Jeremiah it says that God can see into your heart, into the crevices of your mind. So in the Messianic age, you're accountable to God. Where here, you may not be accountable to God on this earth. And so the difference between the morality is God knows not only what you're expressing in your heart or whether it's false or true, but he also sees into what your thoughts are and what your real sincerity is in your heart.
That's very, very interesting. So this then kind of leads to the whole idea of whether most people really even know the difference between right or wrong, if they can easily fool themselves.
Well, I think most people know the difference between right and wrong, but it's choosing right over wrong.
Right.
That's really what it is. And there's this internal voice inside of you. And this internal voice inside of you can rationalize it. And even if you've committed a sin, oh, that wasn't so bad. And then you might commit another. And by the time you've committed a few, you're no longer in control of yourself.
Well, that's interesting. And then there's the idea, well, I'll be forgiven. I just need to ask for forgiveness.
Yeah. I think I can speak, a little bit better being Jewish. But in Judaism, you go to the temple if you do decide. Only a very small percentage of people do go to the temple, a percentage of the Jews. And you go and you're supposed to be accountable on that one day, Yom Kippur, to God. But you still have to go ahead and make the amends for anything you've done against man. That's something that you have to do. And you can say, yeah, I can be forgiven on that one day, but if the next day you go out and start doing exactly what you've done all the year, then you may think you're going to be forgiven, but God knows better. Now, you can get away with it in this world, and maybe you probably won't notice it if it happens, but God usually acts measure for measure, whether it's in this world or the next. But to get into the next world, it's my total feeling that you have to be accountable to God. And he's the keeper of the scorecard.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows exactly what's going on in every individual.
And this is really where the whole premise of your book is exploring this idea of, is there life after death?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I I can't help but believe it, because once I had these experiences, these wonderful experiences that I would love to continue to have, once I had those, everything that I believe now is within what's written. And so, I mean, I look at other interpretations, and I may take a different interpretation myself, but the overall concept of a messianic age happening, I totally believe in, just as I have unshakable faith in God.
So tell us then who the main character is in this book, the whole interview situation. Who are the interviewers? I mean, let's tell our audience a little bit about this aspect of your book.
Well, I actually started out with two characters,
mm-hmm.
two very close friends, Yinnon, Y-I-N-N-O-N, and Yosef, Y-O-S-E-P-H. And Yosef is the one, in the early part of the book, we talk about both characters and their experience, and somehow they do a type of timeline therapy, and they wind up in heaven. But it's only Yosef that goes on to be interviewed. And my middle name is Joseph, so Yosef and me are very closely interlinked, not only in name, but also as to what's happening in the book.
Sure. Well, this is somewhat of an autobiographical book as well.
Yeah,
correct?
It is somewhat, but
mm-hmm.
the interviews never took place.
You were never interviewed, right?
No, this is all a creation of my mind.
Right, right.
I didn't have these.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Hi there. Are you looking for new ways to promote your book? Why not consider being interviewed live? With the huge impact internet radio as well as podcasting is making in our society, your voice can now be heard worldwide. Let Juanita at Inside Scoop Live create the necessary steps for you. You will not only receive a web page of your own, but your interview will be available for MP3 download and RSS feed. As well, your interview will be posted on venues such as iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Podcast Alley, and the Inside Scoop Live blog. Go to InsideScoopLive.com today for more information. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking today with Jerry Pollack, author of Messiah Interview. You can find out more about Jerry through his website, thirdtempleinfo.com.
I inserted the first interview as Gabriel because he's an angel. He's believed to be in both Christianity and Judaism, at least in Orthodox Judaism. And Gabriel's the angel of fire. So he sets the tone for the next seven interviews. And the next seven interviews are done by shepherds or princes, the seven shepherds or seven princes who are destined to be with the Messiah, to help the Messiah at the end of days. So these seven shepherds are Methuselah, and this all comes from a lot of the folklore and a lot of what's been written outside of the Hebrew Bible. And you have Methuselah, you have Hanukkah, his father, or Enoch, and you have Seth, who was the third son of Adam. You have King David, who's kind of the chairperson. Then you have Moses and Jacob and Abraham. Jacob and Abraham are patriarchs of the Old Testament. And that's all set in heaven. And then the final interview, I thought, could be, because there are a lot of riddles in the Bible to try and understand who the Messiah is. So I made Isaiah the prophet, who's from the Old Testament or the Hebrew Bible, as the final interview, and that interview takes place in the future Third Temple at the end of days on earth, whereas the seven interviews and the angel Gabriel take place in heaven in the Third Temple. So these, and because one of the two ways you can go into the Messianic Age is whenever we're ready. My reasoning was that these princes are already resurrected, ready to go, because they have to be on a moment's notice, ready to go, if God decides we're going to go into the Messianic Age today. So that's how I came to the interviewers the interviews.
Now, this is taken from a Jewish perspective, so we're not seeing Jesus in here whatsoever.
You see him a little bit in there because you can't help but see him.
Okay.
And he is, of course, the Messiah from the Christian point of view.
Mm-hmm.
My own feeling is that I'm open. I'm open in that we really don't know. God had the name of the Messiah before creation. In the Hebrew Bible, it's believed that God had seven things before creation, and another one of them would be repentance, because humans are imperfect, and he had to find a means to not judge them strictly on harsh judgment, but on mercy as well. So repentance was also there before creation. Well, the name of the Messiah, the third temple was there before creation. The name of the Messiah also was. And because there's a precedent for the fact that both Hanukkah or Enoch went to heaven, he was taken alive, and so was the Elijah the prophet taken to heaven, then that opens up the possibility that, you know, Jesus was taken to heaven, which Christianity believes in. And because Elijah the prophet is, that we know of, is coming back to herald in the Messianic age 3 days before the Messiah comes, that's what's thought and believed, then it's a possibility. Now, having said all of that, there, if you read all of the arguments of Judaism, there are multiple saying that Jesus can't be the Messiah. And it would have to be somebody who is probably alive or yet to be born. And my own feeling is that, and I say this with the utmost respect, is that it's possible that the Messiah will have the souls of very, very great people who've gone before him, including Jesus. So when that, all of those souls or the characteristics of those souls comes into the Messiah's body, then the combination of that body and soul will bring to fruition all of the good qualities of the Messiah. So I believe that the soul over the ages is being refined to be inserted into, you know, God's Messiah.
So there's one Messiah.
I believe there's one Messiah, yes. It could be a he, it could be a she. People talk about a Messiah being a collectivity of the human race.
Mm-hmm.
And people talk about, you know, they talk about almost like a New Age feeling where God is, that you, everybody can become a God within himself, or everybody can become a Messiah within himself. But my own belief is that just because of all what the Hebrew prophets said and what's written elsewhere, that there is a Messiah, and that person is a descendant of King David, and that when the time is ready and God is ready, the Messianic age will come, and so will the Messiah. And maybe that person is even on the scene now,
maybe,
and has not yet come forth. But having said all that, it's possible that when the Messiah comes, it may be Jesus. I don't know. Nobody knows. So I don't think you can take a closed view of anything. And I'm not trying to straddle the fence.
Right.
I'm just trying to be as objective as I can, because every person, no matter how objective they are, we all have blind spots.
Yeah.
So including me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to be objective, and I think we don't know. I from a personal point of view, I believe the Messiah is not yet evident.
Mm.
He might be around, but he's not yet evident.
Well, now, okay, the main character in the book, Yosef, he is very flawed. He's being considered to be the Messiah, and the interviewers are very quick to point out his flaws. So tell us a little bit about what you're leaning towards making his life so troubled and challenging, and if this was a purpose of the Creator to make humans imperfect.
Well, your latter statement, definitely. I think King David said it. He said that, and he realized in Psalms, the book of Psalms, and he realized that we are but flesh. Every human being is imperfect. Even the most righteous person is imperfect. As Solomon said, King Solomon said, David's son, there is not a righteous person, they call that a tzaddik in Judaism, there's even the most righteous person has sinned. There's not one on earth that hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's in your actions or your, and I would think yes, or your thoughts. So even all of these, the greatest people, whether it's Moses or Abraham or Jacob, and that's pointed out in the Messiah interviews, Yosef tries to throw zingers at his interviewers,
mm-hmm.
saying, well, hey, you're not so perfect. There are problems within each of your, your beings, except for the angel Gabriel. He's not human, but everybody else, the other eight interviewers are human. So there, God made us imperfect. And I think this was intentional, because in order to go to a messianic world, you have to go from imperfection to perfection. You have to know imperfection to know perfection. You have to know disharmony to know harmony. You have to know hate to know love. But in terms of my own belief, I believe that, yeah, the Messiah, he could be a very, very flawed human being. I think God purposely chooses people with backgrounds that are damaged, because this makes you humble. It makes you humble, because you don't want somebody who's never had a damaged background and who's very arrogant.
That's so true. I mean, look how much we learn through adversity.
Oh, we definitely. That's how we gather strength.
Yeah.
We gather strength, and the more adversity you have, the irony is that the more you get up. If you have kind of like a spiritual outlook, because I really believe you need that in life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I didn't have it, I crashed, and I crashed badly to the point where I almost lost my life through suicide. Mm-hmm. So.
Wow. So you're obviously then in a very good place right now. You know, you mentioned a little bit about a spiritual ladder. Where are you at on the spiritual ladder these days?
Well, I think I'm in a very good place. I'm in a very good place emotionally, because I think I've pretty well eliminated about 99% of my neurosis, my dysfunctional family growing up, and my my time in an unwanted pregnancy that I've regressed to. I'm very good there, and I'm also, I think, crawling up the spiritual ladder, but I think I'm in a very good place, because there's a saying in the Bible that says, Shiloh, Shiloh Lishma, which means you're doing something for your own sake. For your own sake. And then there's just Lishma, where you're doing something for its own sake. And I think I'm at the place now where I'm doing something both for Lishma, the thought of being a good person and doing things which God would approve of, and being able to stand in God's place. And everybody has always a certain amount of ego. You need that in this world, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I'm both Shiloh Lishma and Lishma for myself as well. And I kind of think that's a very good place to be. I've accepted myself, and I think that's been very, very hard for me to do. I've accepted myself, I like myself, and I think that allows me to like other beings. I feel like I'm moving towards being a holy human being. By that I mean I'm trying to do good things and to do good things for people. I'm trying to believe in the Ten Commandments, and not only believe in it, but, you know, follow the Ten Commandments.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting how long it can take in life to get to that point.
Oh, it's very hard. They're seemingly very simple, but it's very they're not.
Yes.
Because of all these moral choices that keep coming up, it's so easier to choose the easy way out or the wrong choice. It's much easier to do that. It's much harder to take the harder road.
Yeah. Now, do you think now, in these times where we're seeing extremely high levels of stress and uncertainty in people's lives, do you think that there's the potential for people to start losing their faith, or do you see people's spirituality actually growing right now?
It's a hard call. It's a very hard call, Juanita, because not really getting around to talk to people, I really don't know. It's a real shocker, you know, this time period for everybody, and it could be both. And the only thing, my own feeling is that, from everything I've gained on the spiritual ladder, is that it's possible that when you're down, you could feel that you're down, but it's kind of better if you feel the down is part of an up. If you do that, I think, and I really believe, I truly believe this in my heart. I really believe that there's a difference between being spiritual and believing and not being spiritual and believing. You may be both people may be exactly the same in terms of their qualities and the sincerity of their heart. But I think if you kind of believe and you've done everything possible in your life to, or possible in a situation where things are really going bad for you, then if you turn to God and you even talk to him, if you take a walk, then you'll receive his wine. If you try and sincerely try and be a good person, or there's a future that God sees in you where you will be a good person, then I believe that you'll get help. I really believe that. I really believe that this is a very, very difficult time, and that if you're righteous and you do have a belief, you can take the next step. And it's like there's a saying that says that God gives his fragrance to all, and I believe that's everybody, but his wine is reserved for those who are righteous and wish to be guided by him. And so it's you can be in, I took 200 pills. And
wow.
Then, and in 1995, March of 1995, if there wasn't a spiritual experience that my wife had, I wouldn't be around today. I was at the lowest of my low. I'm very grateful that I'm still here.
But, we are too.
Thank you. But I've been to the lowest of low spots. I had this agitated depression where I could not sit still. I had to keep moving and walking. I couldn't sit still for a few seconds. It was so bad, and there was nothing that was helping me, and I was going on for months and months. It was so bad that it was the time in my life where that I just said I can't stand it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife was 45 minutes away with my daughter, my youngest daughter, in a restaurant, and something came to her, and she said, they ordered it, and something came to her that said, there's something wrong with Dad, we have to get home. And she came back, found me. I was peacefully in bed saying, this is the end. this is the end of me. I had taken the pills.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of like a miracle. And they rushed me to the hospital, pumped my stomach, and for about 2 to 3 days, they didn't know whether I was going to live or not. And so I've been to the bottom.
Yeah, yeah.
And so look at the up now. That down has become part of my up. So if people could kind of take that as a message with them and say, look, I've done everything possible to come out of this situation that I'm in the present. Can you help me, Lord? Can you do that? And if you're a disbeliever, I don't think anything will help you because you'll never even get to that point where you'll do that. But if you're possibly a believer, you might do that. You may not lose your faith. You may strengthen your faith.
It sounds like there's almost a point where you just have to completely let go and surrender.
Yeah, and sometimes that is so true.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's so much easier to surrender to your feelings than it is to fight them or to run away from them. Mm-hmm. It is so much easier to do that and just let yourself sink and say, boy, you know what? This is terrible. I feel terrible. I'm at my lowest of lows. And if you do that, and you then can think, go maybe take the next step for yourself.
Mm-hmm. You know, I wish we had all day to talk. We're just kind of getting started here. I'm looking at the clock, and we have to wrap things up. But I wanted to just squeeze one more question in here, and it's regarding admission requirements that you talk about to get into heaven. In this book, in Messiah Interview. So what can you tell us about admission and how you figured this out?
Well, again, there's a fork in the road,
yeah.
As usual. From what's written, there are two possibilities. And one says that all who call out to God and call out in a time of need when, say, the destruction happens, or if the destruction happens at the end of days, if we go through devastation like the New Testament points out, then you'll be saved.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, in the book of Revelations, it talks about exactly how, you know, Jesus will come by and he'll fight the Antichrist and then how we'll be saved. The second possibility is that people who try and improve their character and lead a more righteous life will be admitted and enter the Messianic Age. In the Messiah interviews, I took the latter course because I was trying to empower people to improve their character and try and walk a more holier life, even though that's very difficult. As we said, you can't even follow the 10 simple commandments.
Right.
But in the Messiah interviews, I took, you know, maybe a tact where if you summed up all of the moral choices that you made, that you would need like a 77.5% good average and a 22.5% bad average.
Wow. You've really broken it down.
Which is pretty high.
Yeah,
that
is high.
And you have to take it with a grain of salt, what I wrote, because maybe it's much lower than that. Maybe if you're 65% good and 35%, or maybe if you're 60% good, or maybe if it's 50-50.
Or 51 and 49.
51 and 49, you'll be admitted. I took that approach because I really feel that the higher you set the bar, the more you'll move towards that bar. Mm. So, and even the interviewers thought that was too rigorous, and I went down. The truth is, what the irony is that I don't know if I'm going to make it.
Right.
Because nobody knows. It's only God who's the judge of all this, so we don't know who's going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
So
interesting. Well, you know, we didn't even get to any of the interview questions that you went through in this book, but we'll have to just offer that readers and listeners go and pick up a copy and have a look at what all those questions are.
I'm too long-winded. I can't help it. I was a professor. I'm just too long-winded. My wife tells me that all the time.
No, you're great. So let's mention your website here. It's ShekinahThirdTemple.org. And so your books can be purchased through your website?
Yeah, maybe we should spell that because it's hard. Maybe they could go to an easier entry into the website. If they went to www.thirdtemple, T-H-I-R-D-temple, T-E-M-P-L-E, info, thirdtempleinfo.com, that'll take them to the website also.
Oh, great. Okay, that's a little easier.
And then the links are on there to purchase the book. We're not selling books on the site as yet, but they'll find links either in the site or in the blog that I'm learning about purchase the books.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Jerry, for coming on the program today. This has been very insightful, inspirational. I know all of our listeners will have definitely taken something away from this, and we certainly encourage people to check out Messiah Interviews. It's a very unique and interesting read.
Thank you, Juanita. It's my pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad I had the opportunity.
Me too.
To share my imperfections.
Well, we'll do it again. I have a feeling that you're going to be putting out more books in this whole genre. So.
Okay.
Yes. All right. Well, take care, and we'll talk again, Jerry.
Thanks.
All right, listeners, that's been Jerry Pollack. His latest book, Messiah Interviews, Belonging to God, is out now. And his website, www.thirdtempleinfo.com, is where you can go to find out more about Jerry, his book, and his other endeavors. And that will send you to different websites. There's links to other websites there. So do check it out. So I want to thank you for tuning into the program today. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.